remember, you're not comparing George Springer to Kevin Kiermaier in right field. You need to compare him to Teoscar Hernandez.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, think about all the previous times Jansen has come off of the injured list in the last 2 years.
And then just destroyed the world?
That's what I'm hoping.
Good question. We can go back to it.
Do I need the blue button again?
No, this one's not about homophobe Anthony Bass.
And welcome to episode number 271 of Artificial Turf Wars, where we didn't ever think we would start two episodes in a row talking about non-baseball ignorance and hatred. I am your host, Greg Wisniewski, and I am joined by the frustrated Joshua Housum. How's it going, Josh?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Like, you know, I thought you guys did a tremendous job covering this last week. I was a little, you know, sad not to be part of that, but there's nothing I could have added, really.
All right.
But
well,
I was not hoping to be able to be discussing it again today.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
we have to.
So we will talk about the ever worsening handling of the Anthony Bass debacle that is going on around the Blue Jays, which has completely overwhelmed my Twitter feed, and rightly so. We will also talk about the baseball aspects of this club, which are the Manoa demotion, the continued excellence of 3/5 of this rotation, of course. Those guys deserve a shout out. The defense helping carry that load of a team that does not hit that much, except the occasional home run, apparently. Dalton Varsho might be turning a corner, and Danny Jansen might be on the path to returning to the ball club. We have a question from you guys, and then we have a we have a classic do-over. I think we need something as ridiculous as the Keith Hernandez do-over, just to kind of soften the blow of what has been a lousy week to be a Blue Jays fan. Anthony Bass and homophobia are still both apparently part of this policy.
Oh, boy. So, Ross Atkins, he did a media hit where he was honestly saying the right things. You know, you couldn't have said more right, which, you know, was kind of sort of a point. People were like, is it really that perfect now after a few days? It was a little hard to accept. But he comes out and he says that, you know, since it happened, Bass had spoken to some LGBTQSIA2, I think, plus. If I got any of those wrong, I apologize. But he spoke to some leaders from the community and he had some good conversations and he had some enlightenment. These are the words that Ross Atkins used. And then they let Bass talk to the media. And that was just complete bull. Sorry, Greg, you're going to need the button. But
right, noted.
And he comes out and then he says, no, he doesn't think the video he shared was hateful. And he still has his beliefs that all he's going to do is just be careful about what he shares on social media now. It's like, He didn't learn anything. Like, he still thinks that, you know, putting pride things on shirts that kids can see is demonic and evil. And he's just not saying it as loud anymore, except he did say it as loud again. It's just horrible.
Yeah.
And by the way, so I got to change how I refer to him because I have to be consistent. He's the homophobe Anthony Bass. Since I do that with those Rays pitchers, I'm going to be doing with Anthony Bass from here to the end of his time as a Blue Jay.
Yeah, I mean, it is 100% clear that he doesn't get it on any level that you're free to believe whatever you want to believe. Absolutely. Not without penalty. And also, I mean, just a wanton disregard for the well-being of other people. And I think the capper for me is the multiple times he's referred to being gay or being trans as a choice. It's like, yeah. When did you choose to be straight, Anthony? What day did you choose your straightness? Did you mark that down in your diary? Because I don't recall choosing my sexual orientation as a conscious choice. I certainly don't remember mulling it over on a particular day. I don't think gay people do that either. I've every conversation I've seen online regarding that as a choice seems to think make it a false argument. So again, you're not attacking people for a choice. You're not talking about their beliefs. You're attacking people for who they are. It's not acceptable for a reason. It's called hate for a reason. Calling people just being themselves demonic is insane. And yet he got away with it twice. No penalty.
Well, and then now they're tripling down, I guess. So Anthony Bass was asked by the person throwing. Oh my goodness. Breaking news as you're recording. Anthony Bass has been designated for assignment.
Oh, well, okay.
The homophobe Anthony Bass is gone.
That's too late. I will not argue at this point that it's too little. I will say it's too late, but it's absolutely too little. Yeah, he went from catching the ceremonial first pitch on Pride Night to being DFA'd.
Wow. I mean,
that's my live reaction. Frickin' wow.
We literally just learned this as we're recording it, so you're getting this unfiltered, everybody. I mean, good. He shouldn't be around. He's not a good pitcher. He's not a good person. What reason is there for keeping him? I mean, look, what I was starting to say before I read that breaking news.
Sorry, who is that from? I want to give full credit to whoever just broke that.
Everybody, but the Blue Jays Twitter account first put out that Mitch White's been reinstated and Bass is gone. So the Blue Jays social media, who's been taking hell for this the entire time.
Oh, yeah. Just a beating.
Yeah. I mean, look, I get that, like, that's the only way the team's going to see it. But the social media people can't do anything. So I felt sorry for them, but I also understood it. But they were going to let him catch the first pitch, which, as an olive branch, he was invited by the person throwing it. But the message that it sends to everybody else was that what he said and continues to think and say is okay. Well, apparently it's not okay because he's gone. And good job. Like, he should be gone.
Yeah, I mean, I've tweeted it after every win since this whole thing came out. Lovely win by the Blue Jays. Great day to DFA Anthony Bass. there you go. One less homophobe in the MLB.
So I guess the question becomes, why now? Like, why today? Is it because they're doing Pride Night today, but he was supposed to catch the first pitch? Is it because Mitch White is ready and he has to come back to the roster because he's not allowed to be cut? Or is it because Anthony Bass just made Ross Atkins look like an absolute fool yesterday? I mean, it could be any of these things. I don't know, but I mean, I guess better late than never, right? Like, that's the way we have to look at it.
Yep. Like I said, too late, but I will not argue it's too little because, again, he may end up traded since he's been DFA'd, right? There's a period of, is there a period where he could still end up traded? I forget how these rules work.
10 days, yeah.
Yeah, 10 days. He could still end up traded. And I understand why the Blue Jays, are in a position to try and get an asset out of the miserable BS that was Anthony Bass. This happened in the past, right? They got an asset for Yunel Escobar after. Again, I was going to go into the history of all the times where the, you know, homophobia has reared its ugly head and the Blue Jays have managed to stumble into the right thing eventually. This is now just on the list, so we don't have to break them all down.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know that we have much more to say because I'm sure there'll be some statement from Anthony Bass after his DFA to the media. Because this will be the time when he decides that he really wants to talk to people, as opposed to all the other times when could have been contrite. And, you know, made an effort to understand his fellow human beings were hurt by the things he said. All right. Yeah. Good riddance. Let's switch to baseball. In not good riddance, Alek Manoah is all the way down in Florida, at the most base level of the Blue Jays minor league system in order to rebuild himself, which this isn't going to be in the do-over section, but it is a do-over for Nick and I, who said, who are you going to replace him with? And apparently the answer after only getting one out in a start was literally anybody.
Bud Francis was always the logical choice because he's the only guy pitching well in AAA. He wasn't on the 40 man, so they had to be a little creative there. They cut Zach Thompson, although he cleared waivers and he's back with the organization because, of course, he did.
We gave his ERA on the last podcast.
The guy who may or may not have been real. I enjoyed that part of the discussion. Yeah, it's really sad what's happened with Manoa, but you know, it's kind of a thing where it had to happen. What was he gaining by being out there every time and just not being able to fix what was happening? And you know, it's like you can't fix mechanics at the major league level. It's really, really hard.
Yeah, we've seen that before. I 100% agree that there's not the room for error trying to fix mechanics at the major league level with the pressure of every start.
Yeah, it's just really, really hard to do. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but I mean, he had the worst ERA in the major leagues among starters with a certain number of innings pitched. And at some point, you have to say, okay, there's something wrong that we need to fix. And look, I even, like, in looking at videos that I've seen side by sides, it does look like there's a mechanical issue. He seems to be more upright in his windup this year. Now, that could be because the pitch clock means he needs to conserve more energy. Could be a mental thing. Atkins, he did this media hit where the first half was about Bass. And then the second half was about Manoa. And the actual really interesting thing stuff came out in the Manoa part, where he basically said that there's something that, like, pitching is all about patterns, right? With like the way you move your body. And he said that essentially something had gone off at the beginning of Manoa's windup that was affecting the entire pattern. And then you keep repeating that, and that becomes where your muscle memory starts to go. So they're getting him away from competition so they can get him back to what he did, because what he did was one of the best pitchers in the American League.
Yeah. And I think, you're certainly, this is, I don't think this is the death knell for Alek Manoa by any stretch of the imagination. I did see an interesting comparison. Did you see the comparison to Juan Guzman?
No, I did not.
They simply said that Guzman came out of nowhere, basically, right, from a short minor league career to tear up the league for 2 years to become an ace, and then fell off and ended up being like a league average-ish starter for another half of a decade. I'm not saying that's where Alek Manoa goes, but I think it's probably a better comparison than Roy Halladay.
Yeah, I think Roy Halladay is a completely wrong comparison, really. I mean, if you look at Halladay, he was a completely different looking pitcher when he first came up. You know, he almost threw a no-hitter in his second career start, but he threw overhand. Like, his windup was completely different from then to when he was rebuilt by Mel Queen, rest in peace, to become the pitcher that we all identify as Roy Halladay. Manoa doesn't need that. He doesn't need a massive overhaul of his mechanics, because what he's done has worked for a very long time, whereas Halladay's only worked for two starts. So I think it really is about the mental reset and just getting back to the slight changes that you can make when you're not trying to get major league hitters out. It's like, okay, Alek, we need you to do this. By the way, you're facing Houston today. Like, you can't do that.
Try not to let Yordan Alvarez tee off on you.
And if you get him out, not Kyle Tucker or Alex Bregman or Jose Altuve. You know, Altuve, I don't think, was in the lineup that day. But yeah, that's the point. It's really, really hard to compete and make adjustments at the same time. So I'm not worried necessarily that the Guzman result's going to happen. I just think that he needs to, like, if they had not tried anything, if they just let him go out there, then maybe that's what would have happened.
Yeah. So for those who aren't aware, that the complex down in Dunedin is the Blue Jays' state-of-the-art facility for rehab, for analysis, for mechanics, for all of this stuff. So the reason he's not, you know, in AAA doing this is because, you know, he doesn't present any asset to AAA, and this is all about looking at him from every possible angle and giving him every opportunity to fix whatever has gone awry with both his control and you know, the effectiveness of the individual pitches.
Yeah. Yeah, and they can. It's also easier to show someone what they're doing wrong when you have this high tech ability to break everything down to milliseconds of a movement, right? And I think that's just what he needs. And so Scott MacArthur was talking about this too. Maybe just like sitting on a beach somewhere, you know, and just like getting away from baseball for a day or two so he can let his mind clear. I think all of that's important, and you can't do that in Buffalo.
We've all been to Buffalo at least once. Oh, hey, man. Yeah, come so at me.
we should talk about Bowden Francis a little bit.
Yeah, because he's going to be he's going to replace that TBD for Saturday on the probable pitchers chart anytime soon.
Yeah, so he I saw him in spring, and his velocity spiked. He was throwing 94, 95, 96 when he'd never done that before. And I saw him carve up the Yankees, who had their A lineup in there and not spring training. So that doesn't mean a whole lot. But he went down to the minors. He got hurt for a little bit. But in the 15 and two thirds, he's thrown in AAA. He struck out 23 batters and he's given up four runs and four walks. Sorry, six runs with four walks. He is a little homer prone. So, you know, that'll happen. That's the reason why he's a 27-year-old in the minors, right? He's not a perfect pitcher. If you say 26 mm-hmm. strikeouts to four walks, there's got to be a flaw somewhere. But a guy who can strike batters out and not walk people is a guy that can give you a chance. And now that Mitch White is back, he can give you a little bit of length if Francis doesn't get the job done, right? He can go out there and throw three innings and get so save the bullpen a bit. So I like the idea of Francis, and I'm very curious to see what he does. And I think that the Twins are a good first matchup, given that their struggles make the Jays' offensive struggles look like the Jays are a World Series team. The Twins have really underperformed offensively, so a team that's going through that might be a better debut for him. It's not his major league debut. He's faced three batters in his career, but it's his first start.
Yeah, and I think, you know, because of the potential return of wow, brain just Hyunjin Ryu. It is one of those he could potentially be a stopgap starter. You don't need him to be great for, you know, 15 starts. You need him to be good enough for a month, and you might not need any more Bowden Francis. I mean, he's better than good enough. Hey, that's a great problem to have.
Yeah, and you know, when it comes to the length of time that we might be seeing the Francis White combo, Atkins did say it's going to be at least a couple weeks. Yeah, they want him to at least go through a couple turns in their rotation of getting used to his routine, his new routine, right? He'll be still pitching and building up at the complex, right? Not facing hitters, but throwing the pitches and working on stuff. But beyond that, there's no timeline. It's really however long it takes Manoah to look like Manoah again. And as much as I hate to talk about this, I said this on Twitter and I hated to tweet about it, but it matters a little bit. Alek Manoah has entered the year with 1 year and 130 days of service time. Last year, the cutoff for Super 2 was 2 years and 28 days. And two years, 128 days. So if he's down for 3 weeks and a bit, he might lose out on Super 2 arbitration, which is a very unfortunate consequence of his struggles. I don't think that's remotely part of why the Jays did it. Obviously, he earned the demotion with his pitching, but it's just an unfortunate side effect.
No, it's not a cynical observation. It's just an observation.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we can safely talk about this as not the end of the world because of the other 3/5 of the Blue Jays rotation, which has been from good to great to excellent, depending on how you want to rank those guys. Chris Bassett's last turn. The efficiency with which he carved up the lineup was incredible. 52 pitches over the first six innings, less than 10 pitches per inning. Doesn't have to be fancy, I guess, if it works.
It's one of the really interesting things about this Jays rotation. You have Gausman out there who just strikes out everybody. He leads the American League in strikeouts. He's the only guy who has as many strikeouts as he does is Spencer Strider, who also strikes out everybody for the Braves. And then you have Bassett, who just throws everything at you. He's got like 8 pitches. You know, Gausman has 2, really. He throws a slider, but it's really a fastball splitter. And then Bassett's got 8 pitches ranging from 68 to 93 or 4. And then Brios has 3 pitches ranging from 83 to 93. It's really 3 totally different approaches, and they're all just working.
Yeah. Yeah, like it's like one mistake per start for each guy, and it happens because they're human. But that one mistake often only costs them 1 or 2 runs. And then the rest of the night is you watching the opposing lineup. And this was Houston. This is a team that just torched Gausman in his first appearance. And I think Bassett as well once. Just wrecked them. And the adjustment was made. I don't know what the adjustment was. But watching Gausman strike out 13 of them and drop fastballs right middle and have them so tied up thinking about that splitter that they couldn't pull the trigger.
Yeah, so really interesting that Gausman... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, and then when they did pull the trigger, they swung over top of the splitter like 9 times out of the 13. These are not... You know, these are swing and miss, fooled you completely kind of strikeouts. It was nuts.
Yeah. So one of the really interesting things that's come out of Gausman's last couple of years is that to adjust to the splitter... people stopped swinging at his high fastballs. He was throwing fastballs up and splitters down. So when people saw the ball down, they were just not swinging. So they're not swinging at the splitter. That's what the Astros did. So he's like, okay, I'll start throwing 96 at the knees now, and you can try to adjust to this. Good luck. And they had no chance. And Gausman has now given up 1 or fewer earned runs in 8 of his 12 starts. I mean, he's got 2 starts where he gave up 15 earned runs over, I think it was 8 total innings, 2 blowups, and he still has a 2.63 ERA. That's a testament to how incredible he's been in the other 10, or other 11, sorry, he's got 13.
Yeah. I would not believe that you scored 7 runs off of him if I was watching any of those starts where it didn't happen, right? Like, the explanation would not make any sense to me. You'd be like, oh, yeah, this guy gave up, he just got blown up last start. How? How did he get blown up? Stuff is so good.
Yeah, well, every time he's dominating, I tweet. It's like, I don't understand anybody ever hits Kevin Gausman. I don't get it. And then I watch Chris Bassett, and I don't understand how more people don't hit him, but they don't. One thing that Chris Bassett actually does very, very well is locate his various fastballs. He's got 3 of them. He's got a cutter, a sinker, and a four-seamer at the top of the zone on the corners. He's really good at placing the ball there, and you're not going to give up a lot of damage there, unless you're facing Ellie De La Cruz, in which case it's going to go out of the park at 550 miles an hour. Sorry, Noah Syndergaard. I just had to throw that in there. But when you change speeds and you locate, that's how you have success. And then Barrios just... he has very good movement, and he's just locating. I mean, locating is the big thing for all 3 of them, really. The way they're pitching now, nobody's doing a lot of damage.
Yeah. Yeah. When the contact is limited and weak, or both, or just one of them, rather, it's crazy. And this, strangely, is the Jose Barrios that the Blue Jays thought they were signing, right? And he doesn't look all that different from the guy who just couldn't get it together last year. That's the wild part.
Yeah. So one thing that's funny about Barrios, right? If they could have done with him what they did with Manoah, maybe they would have. Now, they probably wouldn't have, because their rotation depth was really in trouble last year. I mean, they were starting guys that Max Castillo was getting starts. I mean, they were really struggling for rotation depth, as they are again. Like, if someone gets hurt now, they are in trouble. But I think they would have liked to be able to do something like that with Barrios too. Just get him away for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and clean up and not have it go all season. Although, unlike Manoah, he was mixing good starts in and just terrible starts with the good starts, whereas Manoah was bad almost every time out.
The other reason, of course, that this has been working is that when the ball has been getting put in play, there have been some critically good play behind them. Kevin Kiermaier keeps coming to my mind, but certainly he's not alone in his ability to turn a potential disaster into a magnificent game-saving catch on multiple occasions.
I do think we need to start with him, though, because so Kevin Kiermaier, StatCast, here are his numbers. Outs above average, 100th percentile. Outfielder jump, 100th percentile. Arm strength, 98th percentile. And this is the biggest difference that we're seeing. Because Springer's not a bad center fielder, but the jump, the 100 percentile jump, that's where Springer struggled. And that's why the Jays lost that game against the Mariners, because he was a little slow to break on that flare. That, you know, everyone knows what game I'm talking about.
Yeah, we've been there.
Yeah. And then we almost saw the equivalent in the ninth inning of the Bassett start with that low liner that was hit with there was one on second base and a low liner to center. And then Kiermaier came in and made a sliding catch. That's a hit with George Springer, and the game is tied.
It's a .640 expected batting average on that hit.
Right. And he just gets such good jumps. And when you have that in center field, it makes everything easier. Then you have Varsho getting a well above average outfield jumps. You have Springer doing a fine job in right. I mean, his StatCast numbers aren't as good, but it's right field. Like, he makes the big plays. Who cares about if a single falls in sometimes?
Well, remember, you're not comparing George Springer to Kevin Kiermaier in right field. You need to compare him to Teoscar Hernandez.
Right, exactly. And it's an improvement there. And then Varsho is such a game-changing improvement over Lourdes Gurriel in left. And then you get to the infield. And guess what? Bo Bichette's been really good defensively lately. And, you know, one of the only, like, Bo Bichette as a hitter is, he's perfect, right? I mean, well, he's not perfect, but he's one of the best hitters in the game right now. And when we were talking about Bo Bichette's defense earlier in the season, I think he was in the third percentile and outs above average. He's up to 41st, which means he's been really good lately. You know, he's at zero outs above average as opposed to negative numbers. And if he's just an average shortstop with his offense, that's a megastar.
Yeah, absolutely. The American League hit leader, a guy with a 900 OPS at short who plays average defense, is fantastic.
Yeah. And Chapman has turned his defensive weirdness from the beginning of the season around. He's 80th percentile for third base outs above average. He's back to being Matt Chapman. And then Vlad is a great first baseman who yesterday made a saving play with Eric Swanson through a comebacker, like the easiest play in the world. He threw it away, and Vlad had the presence of mind to dive back to the bag and touch it with his glove. Now, Vlad is one of the smartest defensive players on the team. It's really amazing the stuff he thinks of sometimes. And then Merrifield is a solid second baseman. So when you have good defenders everywhere and good pitching, you can be the Blue Jays and somehow be 10-5 in games where you score only 3 runs.
Yeah, and I can imagine being the opponent when they're on, right? When everything is working in the starting rotation and when the balls are getting gobbled up in the infield and the outfield. I can see, like, I know how frustrating it is for that to happen when they go to Tampa. To see really good teams like Houston come in into the Rogers Center and be like, why can't we score enough runs? It's like, I don't know, just everything works. Three runs allowed will send you home with an L. Don't know why, but it works.
Yeah, I mean, 10-5 when you score 3 runs is a record you should not have.
No.
But the Jays pitching and defense helps. Who knew?
Yeah. So who is scoring those 3 runs? I've noticed that, like, after no home runs on, it seemed like, the entire road trip. I know that's not true, but we have seen the ball leave the yard a couple of times for various players on the homestand.
Yeah, it's funny. In the last episode, this was my note I put in the thing about Belt not hitting for power, and you guys had to wear it when he hits 2 home runs immediately after you talk about it. But the power has started to show up, finally. Belt has a couple home runs lately. Varsho's hitting up for a lot more power. Bichette continues to hit for power. Chapman got another home run. Like, Kirk got one. I mean, as these guys start getting back to their norms from a power perspective, the runs will come more. They're still struggling in situational hitting. Not as much, but I mean, like yesterday, they had a situation with second and third, nobody out, and going Varsho, Springer, Bichette, and it went strikeout, out, field out. And, you know, against a guy throwing 89, right? Like, that stuff still happens with too much frequency. But when you're hitting for power, you can get away with that a bit more. And then when that stuff starts coming around as well, then the offense will really get rolling.
We can definitely hope. It is funny that Brandon Belt, you know, if Bo Bichette had not had that power surge in the Houston series, you might be arguing Brandon Belt is the team's best hitter after being arguably the team's worst hitter in the first 3 weeks of the season.
It's funny. We actually have a question about that, so I'll save that analysis. But he's now up to an 829 OPS, which is that's better than Brandon Belt really has been for much of his career. He's hitting really well. Striking out still a ton, but when he's not striking out, he's doing really, like, he's getting on base and starting to hit for do damage.
Yeah. Last note for the week is Danny Jansen. Been on the IL for a little bit. Sounds like he's actually going to be going down and starting to play in games again on a rehab assignment, I believe, this week.
Yes, and with the hope that he'll be back for the Orioles series that starts next week.
That's got to be
Tyler
good news.
Heineman. Yeah, Heineman has actually been really solid as his replacement. You know, he's only got like a 614 OPS, but that's better than you really would have expected out of Tyler Heineman. To be honest, I thought he was going to be a complete zero, and it's actually, you know, better than guys like Biggio and Espinal. But playing really good defense and being not a complete zero offensively with a 364 on base specifically, that's all you can ask for from a third string catcher. So
yeah.
And he held the fort down, but thank God Jansen's coming back.
Yeah. I mean, think about all the previous times Jansen has come off of the injured list in the last
and then just
years.
Destroyed the world.
So I'm hoping.
That's he was starting to do that before he got hurt too. He was really starting to pull the ball again, and then he hit a couple bombs and the game-winning hit. It's like, oh, you're watch out, American League. Here comes Danny Jansen.
Oh man, the strangest guy when he catches fire, because just doesn't add up when you're watching him when he's not on fire. It's like, this guy can have 1,000 OPS for 2 weeks. Really? Go off. All right, we're gonna come back after a short break with a question from you folks. Is it still a singular question?
No, we have three now.
Oh, we have three. Awesome. We're gonna come back with questions because maybe finally our Twitter bubbled up above all of the Anthony Bass hate and people saw that we had requested your questions. We're also gonna have a do-over for a chuckle. And we'll be right back after this. Hear the road, Jack. Don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hear the road, Jack. Don't you come back no more. What do you say? Hear the road, Jack. Don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hear the road, Jack. And we're back. Yeah. I mean, it is our privilege to answer questions from you guys once again. And I'm going to launch it up like this.
Time now to hear from our listeners.
That just seems silly.
Here are the rules. First, I ask a question, then you ask a question.
Now, how does that sound, sweetheart?
Could you repeat the question, please?
The first question goes to Michael Warner, again from Patreon. As a follow-up to last week's question, so do Greg and Nick get a do-over on the Manoa question this week? Yeah, I guess we do get a do-over. I mean, I've taken them before, so it doesn't hurt after the third or fourth do-over.
You know why you don't, actually?
Oh, why?
Because our rule for the do-over always is come on this podcast and talk about it, and we'll never bring it up again. And you talked about it in the first half of the show, so you preempted the do-over.
Oh, lucky me to admit my foibles. Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think it comes down to human beings are really good at making predictions, correct predictions, not so much. Our question from Dave Church that you alluded to earlier at Dave_Church. Do you think Brandon Belt still has the kind of production, still the had this kind of production in him after that dreadful first month?
Sort of. I mean, he was slowed in spring training, right? He didn't start spring training until midway through because he was still recovering from surgery. So I didn't think he would just be completely cooked to the point where he couldn't hit anything. I didn't think that, but obviously doubt does creep in your mind when the guy's swinging through fastballs every single at bat. But he's turned back into the guy that we honestly thought they were getting when we were happy they signed him, which is good.
Yeah, I after watching those first 3 weeks, I was kind of like, I hope that you're not going to have to cheat so much to get, you know, to find the power, like to make contact, right? Because that's what happens when guys slow down as they get older, is they start to cheat. And when you start to cheat, that means you strike out more, which is what he was doing, and you walk less because you're not, you know, you're not really able to make a decision on the pitch that's out of the zone. And I was like, you know, it can all collapse on that. I hope he's not cheating. I was really up in the air about it.
I think that the sign there, though, that he wasn't cheating, he was just missing, is that he is like 98th percentile in not chasing.
Yeah.
He was walking. Like, even when he wasn't hitting, he was taking walks. He just couldn't hit the ball. So it was a sign that he wasn't cheating and he was just doing something wrong. So anyway, but yeah, I'm glad that it's not that. And I'm sure you're glad too.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I just didn't know if the power would come back because I didn't know what the adjustment was.
Agreed. Hence my note for last week's podcast that you had to eat.
That was a rough week. Like, it's like just chewing up all the paper.
Well, it's I blame the homophobe Anthony Bass.
Speaking of which, our third question is about Anthony Bass. This was submitted post DFA from Andrew Arnold. The question is simply, Anthony Bass, can he be designated for assignment to the moon and given only Bud Light? I don't know if the moon is actually a spot that you can designate for assignment. I'm pretty sure the rules just say you can release him after 10 days, but maybe something new.
But I do hope they give him a parting gift basket of Bud Light and clothes from Target. But the answer to your first question, Anthony Bass.
Yeah. I mean, nothing draws out the bleep button better than it's a horrible, horrible behavior by someone who just needed to cross the bar of being a decent human being in any of his public statements and failed miserably. Oh, all right. Let's talk about a do-over.
Oh my God! Did he really just say that?
But we can try again, right?
You talking about a do-over, baby? Are you talking about a f-ing door?
We believe in second chances.
We do believe in second chances for honest mistakes. We really do. And to prove that, Keith Hernandez, who is admittedly one of the most colorful announcers in baseball, if you follow any of the other teams, he had some tips for Alejandro Kirk last Friday night when the Blue Jays were playing the Mets. He suggested to Kirk that you want to always be erect when you make contact.
and then there was just silence in the booth because they had to mute their mics because they were all laughing
for like 30 seconds. Not the first time that has happened to that booth. I've seen many clips, but
then when they came out of the mute, he said, like a telephone bull.
Keith, you're making it worse, buddy.
So this is the old-fashioned do-over that we talk about sometimes, where the do-over started with just a slip of the tongue from Mike Wilner.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they're lighthearted, right? It's not someone did something horrible, you know, which is what a lot of them are. I'm sorry if you can hear my cat. I apologize for that. But it's just fun. Like it, he just said something a little silly, and then he played into it, which is, it's always enjoyable.
Yeah. Yeah. A little wink and a little nudge there. But yeah, I there's a lot of ways to hit. I don't think fully erect is 100% required. It would be uncomfortable.
Especially, you know, like with the protective equipment, like, you know,
no. Oh man. So yeah, I mean, if you want to pick a different descriptor, Keith, feel free, and you can come discuss it with us. But until then, the do-over sits in your court, sir. Oh goodness. Well, that was probably the most left turns I've taken in the podcast, due to news that broke during the podcast. Normally, like, somebody hits a home run in the middle of it and we have to adjust, but this is a different animal entirely.
It sure was.
Other than the DFA of Anthony Bass, I feel like someone in the Blue Jays PR department is probably also getting a DFA in the near future.
Well, I honestly think that the straw that broke the camel's back was, like, they talked and he said he was sorry for this and that, and then actually expressed something to Ross Atkins, which Ross Atkins then shared with the media. And then Bass said the opposite. Atkins like, well, okay, like, screw that. Like, enough of this nonsense. Like, you made me look stupid, but also, like, you lied to me. You're gone.
Yeah. Probably at the top of the mix of things that got him the DFA. Basically making your boss look like an idiot will do wonders for your career path. Do you have a final thought, Mr. Housman?
I do. But also, actually, we just got one more last second question. We can go back to it.
Do I need the bleep button again?
No, this one's not about the homophobe Anthony Bass. Kevin at Kevin Chase 4 asks, is Kirk better when he gets more playing time? Yeah, everybody is, right? It's hard to hit as a catcher for multiple reasons. And one of them is that you just can't play all the time because your body won't allow you to do it. Everybody hits better when they get to see pitches more regularly, and Kirk is no exception. He's hitting better lately. He's hitting for a little bit of hard contact, actually, the last few games, which is nice. But that's going to go away the second Danny Jansen gets back. So hopefully just whatever gains he's made, he can keep.
Well, I think the caveat here is he's better playing more often until he's much, much worse. Right? Well, because he's tired, or he's developed a nagging injury, or his body can't take the punishment, right?
Right, yeah. So, but I think the idea of, like, if he's catching most of the games and then not playing the ones he's not catching, whereas last year he was catching and then DH in the games he wasn't catching.
Yeah.
So he's playing every day. So, yeah, it's a difference. But my final thought, that was just a question I had to answer.
Yeah,
my final
thought, go ahead.
Poor one out for Jay Jackson. Poor guy. someone called it the Chad Jenkins memorial option, which I thought was pretty funny. He comes in for Manoa's one out start and throws 2 2/3 shutout with 4 strikeouts, and then he gets sent to the minors. It's unfortunate being the reliever with options the non-established member of the bullpen with options. But it is a sign that, you know, I've talked about that the one area the Jays have depth is the bullpen. If someone in the bullpen gets hurt, they can go to Jay Jackson. Or if someone else gets hurt, they can go to Hagen Danner. If someone else gets hurt, then maybe Zach Pop will be ready by then. And if someone else gets hurt, maybe Chad Green will be ready by then. They've got a bunch of depth in the minors in the bullpen. And then you got Yasver Zulueta if it really goes crazy. So it's actually the one area where they're strong, and it's kind of nice to see for once.
Yeah, it was like the embarrassment of catchers they had last year. Now it's a bullpen thing. So, final thought. It has been an exhausting week to be a Blue Jays fan because the good things that were happening on the field were overshadowed by all of this BS. And I don't expect this conversation to go away. And I don't want it to go away. I think that anybody should feel welcome at the ballpark. And I think, you know, lip service to pride while saying, well, I can believe that you people are awful and evil is ridiculous. So I think the conversation needs to continue. But I would like to highlight that the Blue Jays are as good as or better than any other team in baseball over the past 11 games. So while all this has been going on, they've been playing really, really well. which does give me hope for them eventually leapfrogging over the Yankees and getting themselves back into a wild card spot, which strangely is actually what this is supposed to be about. Who knew?
Yeah, and so I guess another thing you mentioned about that Astros series, about how important that was, by winning yesterday's game, again, we're recording this on Friday, they won the season series with Houston. That's the only tiebreaker that exists. Well, sorry, there are further tiebreakers if you tie, but they played seven games, so you couldn't tie. But, you know, where the Jays are right now, they might need to beat out an AL West team for a postseason spot. If they finish somehow behind Baltimore and New York, that's what they'll have to do, because no one from the Central is going to be involved. The entire division's under 500. But they might have to beat Houston or Texas, whichever team doesn't win the division. So winning a season series is important.
All right. So you have been Joshua Hausam at Joshua Hausam. And I have been Greg Wisniewski at Coolhead 2010. And this has been episode number 271 of Artificial Turf Wars. And we'll talk at you next week.